Have you ever watched a master at work? Maybe a master mason? Brick after brick after brick. There's an economy of motion. Maybe you've seen a master welder, and more specifically, maybe you have heard a master welder. There's one strike and just continuous frying bacon. There's no interruptions. There's no burps and pops. Perhaps you've seen a fly fisherman out on the stream making these absolutely perfect casts. No wind knots, no dropping the back cast. Every motion, just pure precision, putting the fly exactly where he wants it. Maybe you've watched a master violinist or a celloist. The sound that they're able to produce with fluid body motions, it's just, well, it looks effortless. Hi, my name's Roger Kugler. This is Working at Woodworking Podcast number 31, The Mad Skills of a Professional Woodworker. And that's what I want to talk about today. Being a master woodworker, being a master anything, that term, you make it look so easy. That's one of the greatest compliments I think anyone could pay you, because that demonstrates that you really have taken your skills to that ultimate level where you're not struggling with it. Anything that you have to do in the shop, it's just seemingly effortless. You know exactly where the tool is. You know exactly how to hold it. You know exactly how to manipulate that to get it to do what you want it to do and come up with results that you need. To the person who is unfamiliar with woodworking skills, this can look like magic. In fact, I had a young man from a fraternity come into the shop. He needed these little medallions cut. They're like 4 inches by 5 inches. And I typically just use scrap wood. I went through the pile and I pulled out some pine. He had a drawing that he was able to cut out for a pattern, and I transferred those onto the pieces of wood. I could have stacked them and cut them out all at one time. I think he only needed 5 or 6. I was too lazy to do that, so I had him trace these out on the scrap wood. I took them to the bandsaw and just cut them out. And he later commented, that was like magic. This is something I just did on the spur of the moment to, well, basically get the guy out of the shop so I could get back to work. But to him, who had no concept of how any of this stuff works, it appeared to be magic. So have you reached that magical stage in your skills where people just stand around and look at you in awe? For me, I've been doing this for over 50 years. And I can't always say that I had that magic touch. In fact, it was a few years ago, a number of years ago, my wife came out into the shop and we were talking about something, and I continued to work because, of course, I'm behind schedule and this job is late. And she just kind of stopped and blurted out, "You have gotten really good at doing this." Huh? And she explained that it used to take you a lot longer to do this. I don't even remember what I was doing, but apparently that impressed her. Now, you might be familiar with the name Malcolm Gladwell. He's a Canadian journalist who's written several books. One of them was called Outliers. And in the book, he puts forth that a master is someone who has spent 10,000 hours doing something. And it's a combination of talent and this repetition that allows someone to really perfect a certain process, a certain skill, a certain talent. And I agree with a lot of what he says, but when it comes to craftsmanship, woodworking, carpentry, building, I think there's one element that he totally left out. In fact, he was concentrating primarily on musicians. And with the skilled trades, there's one factor that I really think that has not been accounted for or taken seriously enough. Yes, you need talent. Yes, you need the work. You need repetition. But I also think you need a very high degree of laziness. Why in the world would I ever say that? I know. But think about it. If you have to do a job for 8 or 10 hours, I don't care if it's what the job is, making pancakes, stacking blocks, sorting bolts, just the most mind-numbingly dull, boring task you could think of. And if that was your job and you have to do this for long periods of time, I think most people's natural tendency of laziness will kick in and they will figure out some way that they can accomplish this task with as little energy expended as possible. And we've talked about this in some other episodes, where if you're doing something and you have to walk all the way across the shop to pick up a tool or to pick up a part, it doesn't take very long for you to figure out that if you move that tool or that part closer to where you are, you don't have to walk so far. And I think that mastery is that type of efficient use of resource, of energy, that really leads to mastery of a skill. I think one of the best examples of this is the concept of cut to the line. If you've ever worked with students or with young apprentice carpenters or someone like that, and they have to cut a board a certain length, they measure it out, they strike the line square to the board, and they pick up a saw, maybe a hand saw, maybe a circular saw, maybe a miter saw, and they need to cut the board to that line. What do? They cut off an 1/8 inch proud. Then they nibble a 1/16 inch of that away. And then a 32nd. And it's like, good grief, just cut to the bloody line, will you? We don't have time to sit there and let you nibble this thing away. We've got to get this done. And that laziness and that urgency, if you can get a job done faster, then that means there's more time to be lazy later. Here's another example. If you have to drill holes in a piece of wood, and you set up and you get your square out and your tape and you measure each individual point that you have to drill. You have to drill 100 pieces of wood. If you mark each piece of wood with pencil and square to get that the location of every hole, you are literally going to be here all day and probably half the night. So being lazy, you set up a series of stop blocks so that you can take the material to the drill press, to the stop blocks, and execute the hole. How about the bandsaw test? Cutting to the line. Are you 1/4 inch off the line and then take it to the sander? Or are you 1/32nd, maybe 1/16th from the line and then take it to the sander? Maybe you're cutting right on the line with such a fluid, graceful motion that you don't have to take it to the sander. That might be someone who's mastered the bandsaw and has a really good blade. Using a handsaw, same type of thing. Have you ever seen a carpenter or maybe a woodworker need to strike a line that is 5/16 inch away from the edge of the board? And he picks up a pencil and he kind of shifts it into his fingers and then holds a knuckle against the edge of the board and draws it down across the edge of the board. And you're thinking, no way. And to challenge him, you pick up a tape measure. It's 5/16 inch. How in the world did he do that? Well, she's probably done that more than once. And they've trained their eye to be able to hit 5/16 exactly. I was fascinated with my older brothers out in the garage. They would call out to me, bring me a 3/8 socket. And I would dig through the toolbox and I would come up with a 3/8 socket. And then it was a 5/8. And then a 3/4. Wrenches, sockets, open end, boxed in. I was a gopher. And I could never understand how they knew what wrench that they needed without measuring the bolt. They had been doing this for a lot longer than I had been doing it. And they had trained their eyes to recognize the difference between a 9/16 bolt and a 1/2 inch bolt. How about distance? You've probably seen someone who is trying to estimate the length of a hallway to know how long the runner should be. They say it's 24 feet. You look at them incredulously and say, no, that's 12 feet 6 inches. They don't believe you. A tape measure is produced and it comes out to be 12 feet 6 inches and a quarter. This gets into what I call the sixth sense of the professional woodworker. You know, there's a movie, The Sixth Sense, and there's, you know, we say we have five senses. Well, I actually, as woodworkers, I think we have six senses. The first sense is touch. Have you run your hand across the board and been able to detect a cup in the board, or maybe a convex? Or maybe you can feel where some grain is breaking. Our sense of touch is so incredible. Scientists have figured out that the average human can detect a defect, an unevenness in a surface 4/1000ths of an inch. I've left a link in the show notes about the article that goes into, they actually get it into the nanometer, you know, scale of just how incredibly sensitive our touch is. We can detect dips and hollows and humps, uneven elevations. If you're bringing two pieces of wood together, you use your fingers, top and bottom, to feel if those are even. 2/4000ths of an inch. That is absolutely incredible. And if you've ever, you know, done a curve piece of furniture, you can run your hand across that curve and you can feel if there's a flat spot in it. Or if you've ever done any boat work or fiberglass work or body work, you know exactly what I'm talking about. There is no instrument, there is no gauge that is more sensitive than your fingers. By running them across a surface, you can detect tremendously small variations like that. It's 4/1000ths of an inch. That's kind of mind blowing. Have you ever known anyone who can walk across the floor and tell you if it's level or not? I had the privilege of being friends with an old carpenter, and he would go into a house and he'd just walk around, you know, we need this remodeled, we need, you know, the customer wants this repainted and maybe this torn out and so on and so forth. And he just casually mentions, and he said, do you want us to do anything about the uneven floor? And the customer's like, what are you talking about? And says, well, your floor slopes a 1/2 inch to the outside wall. What? No idea. Somebody produces a ball, puts it on the floor, and the thing starts rolling. But he was able to detect that just by walking on the floor. How about stair carpenters? I can guarantee they'll be able to pick up an 1/8 of an inch difference between tread rises, probably even less than that. The code allows for a certain variation, but it's amazing how people can just pick up on that just by walking up and down stairs. So in addition to the sense of touch, we also have the sense of sight. Can you tell if a line is straight? Can you tell if a board is straight or if it has a bow in it, maybe a twist? Here's the classic one, a crooked picture hanging on the wall. I used to get in trouble when I was a kid. My mom would drag me off to some friend's house and I'd walk in there and I'm going around touching everyone's family photos. Well, they're crooked. Yeah, that wasn't a polite thing to do that my mother explained to me, but they're crooked. You know, straighten those things out. Some people cannot do that without a level. Some people can't do that even with a level. So if you run a board across the joiner and turn it over and look, can you tell if that board is perfectly straight? Or do you have one of those fancy, you know, $100 precision machine straight edges that you have to put it up to see if the thing is straight? If you do, cool, no problem. But start training your eye because it can do the same thing. I've spent years and years and years handling canoes and kayaks, and my eye's gotten pretty good at detecting unfair curves in a hull. What about square? Is one thing square to another? Your eye is actually really good at doing that if you develop it, if you kind of pay attention. Parallel is really easy to pick up with your eyes. Your eyes are incredibly sensitive if you're paying attention to what they're seeing. I think one of the very best ways of training your eyes to see is to study photography or to study art, because that really focuses on how our eyes see. Hearing, our third sense. You can tell if a wall is hollow. You can tell where the stud is. You do the tap test. Sure, some people have one of those fancy electronic, you know, gadgets that you turn on and you run across the wall and it starts beeping at you, you know, the stud's here. Or you can do that with sound by simply rapping your knuckles. Granted, it doesn't work all that well on plaster and lath walls. That's why those old houses built with plaster and lath walls sound so good, because there's just a deadness to the sound. They're quiet, you know, compared to a more modern drywall type construction that is so prevalent today. Anyway, sorry, digress there. Maybe you've been doing some veneering and you want to make sure that veneer is really adhered. And so you take your fingernail and you start tapping across that veneer. If there's a dry spot, you will know it because that sound will change. Maybe you bought a really expensive piece of plywood, but there's one place that doesn't look quite right, and you do a tap test. Yep, there's a void in there. You can hear that. What about tone wood? The sound of wood. I've studied a little of the luthieri black magic, and I was always confused on tone wood. And I had the great fortune of having a professional luthier in my shop one day. And I asked him, you know, tone wood, what exactly is that? What do you mean by that? And he just nonchalantly reached over to a stack of wood I had, you know, leaning against the wall in no particular organization at all, and picked up a piece of wood and held it about 3 or 4 inches above the concrete floor and dropped it. Thunk! He reached over, picked up another piece, and dropped it. Ding! That was absolutely amazing. I had no concept that woods could sound differently. Oh, sure, you build them, you put them into a guitar or a violin or something, but just a board? The boards sounded different. Yeah, I spent the rest of that afternoon going through all my scrap pile, you know, dropping them onto the concrete on the end grain. Doing, dunk, dunk, ding. I had a great fun. So we can use our sense of hearing to even detect. Oh, you can definitely do that if you're suspicious that a piece of wood may have a crack in it. You drop that on, you know, the concrete floor, and you'll definitely hear that crack reverberate. You can pick that up just immediately. So now that master woodworker is incorporating, you know, the sense of sound into what they do and how they do it. What about the sense of smell? Well, if you've been cutting wood on a table saw and it's not going really well, you may definitely use a sense of smell to detect that blade starting to burn the wood. Maybe you're pushing that wood through and you're just smelling something not quite right. Oh, shoot. My V-belt is slipping, and you can smell that rubber. You know, when that rubber gets hot, you know, there's a certain smell right there. What about an electrical arc? Yeah, ozone. You will pick up on that really, really fast because we work in a woodworking shop and there's wood in there and wood burns and we don't want wood to burn in our woodworking shop. Yeah, we are all over that. And you've had a customer come into your shop and they just go, "Ah, it smells so good in here." You don't notice that. You've been in here for 6 hours. It smells good in here? The only thing you can really smell is the sweat that's coming off of you. But you can smell different types of wood. Pine certainly smells different than red oak. Well, honestly, red oak smells like dog poo. I really don't like using red oak, to be honest with you. I know it's an incredibly good wood. There's a tremendous amount of furniture. I just don't really enjoy using red oak. Walnut, that most definitely has a distinctive smell. And to be perfectly honest, I have really been using my respirator or my dust mask more whenever I'm milling walnut than I used to, because I think there might be a little buildup, a little sensitivity developing there. Cherry certainly smells differently than the other woods. Mold, fungus, decay, I'm very sensitive to that. I mean, spalted maple is wonderful and you can charge a lot more money for it, but to be honest, nope, not going to handle it. I cut any decayed wood out and I'm very, very careful about that. But our sense of smell is kind of an early warning that even if we don't see it, we might smell it and we can learn to avoid it. How about your sense of taste? Well, I'm not in the habit of eating wood, but nah, I got nothing there. And that leaves me to the sixth sense, and that's the sense of safety. Now, we talked about this extensively in episodes 23 and 24, that we seem to develop kind of a sixth sense that when something's not feeling right, we probably shouldn't do it. So what does all this mean? Why even talk about this? You are either a master woodworker right now, or you are on your way to becoming a master woodworker. And I thought it was just be good to talk about some of these traits, more so I think of what other people see in us than what we see in ourselves. And I really think that concept of laziness is very, very important to us. We need to figure out some way of doing something faster and easier with less energy expenditure than it would typically appear. That is what I think other people are commenting on when they say, "You just make it look so easy." Well, thank you. I've worked 30 years to accomplish that. That's like the overnight sensation. Yeah, I've been doing this for 20 years. Now I'm an overnight sensation. In fact, that book, Outliers, they get into that. He points out that the Beatles, when they came to the U.S., in what, the early 60s, they were billed as the overnight sensation, this talented young group of Brits from Liverpool. What nobody had pointed out was that they had spent months and months and months in Hamburg, Germany, working a nightclub, playing 8-hour sets for 7 days a week, for months at a time. Yeah, overnight success. So if there is something that you are not real good at, I suggest you practice. Of course, you're going to practice everything when you're building a bookcase or building kitchen cabinets or something like that. But devote some dedicated practice to these skills that we've talked about today. You know, if your bandsaw skills are a little shaky, practice. I would take a piece of scrap wood for my students and I would draw a straight line and a very easy, you know, curved line and then a very, you know, serpentine line and a zigzag line and all of these different cuts on a bandsaw, and I would have them cut those out. And, you know, 15 minutes of practice can really improve their technique on some of these things. If your handsaw skills are not very good, practice. Learn to cut square to a piece of wood. Don't always reach for the combination square and strike a line. I think Frank Klaus does this better than anyone. And if you can get your hands on some of his hand-cut dovetail videos, I'll do a search, and if I find anything, I'll put them in a link in the show notes. But Frank has a way of teaching hand-cut dovetails that is incredibly just intuitive. And the way he gets you to use your body and positioning your hand and the saw, it's fantastic. And of course, Frank makes this look effortless. But practice with your favorite handsaw. Cut something square. Cut something plumb. Now angle and cut plumb. Cut to a certain depth. Cut to 5/8 of an inch. Count your strokes. Can you close your eyes and cut square and plumb to a certain depth? Practice that. See how well you can learn to do that. Take some drill bits. Take 6 drill bits. Put them out on the table. Close your eyes. Pick one of them up. What's the diameter of that drill bit? Then check it again and again and again. And you can start to calibrate your fingers to determine that exact thickness. How long is that board? Well, stand back and look at it. Visualize how long 27 inches would be. Is it more? Is it less? And you'd be amazed with just a little bit of practice, you can get really good at that. And of course, the touch test. Just start touching stuff. Well, appropriately start touching stuff. But you can feel little variations, little deviations in the surface texture. It's amazing how sensitive our fingertips can be. Test your eyes. Look at something. Is that plumb? Is it square? Pull out a level. Check it. See if all the doorways in your home truly are plumb and level. You might be surprised. Anyway, I thought this would be kind of fun. These are things that a lot of times aren't even in the books, but something that is developed over years and years and years. Other people seem to notice it. We tend to not. So practice. See how good you can get at some of these things. Missed jobs this week? I've had some weird spam. I've had text that, "Hi, my name is Mrs. Loudermilk. Do you do woodworking?" Well, duh. Hoosier Woodworking, that's kind of in the name, you know, and so my alarm bells just go off whenever I see things like that. Anyway, it was just a little suspicious the way this was worded. And I've had a couple emails asking me if I can do some milling for them. They needed this cut down and then planed to this particular thickness, and think about maybe that would be a little bit of cash. A lot of times, people just need something cut perfectly square and smooth, and they don't have the tools, and for $20, $30, they are more than happy to pay you to do that for them. Sometimes it only takes 10 or 15 minutes. In fact, honestly, okay, I end up spending more time talking to them than it actually takes to do the work, which is fun, you know, kind of working in a shop by yourself, it's nice to see people occasionally. And you can make a few bucks. So I want to thank you for tuning in once again, episode number 31. And if you have any comments, criticisms, complaints, please contact me. The information is in the show notes or on the website workingatwoodworking.com. And until next week, happy woodworking.